good morning, good afternoon, or good evening. We are keeping it real, and I'm Lisa Loving. Our guests today are Donovan Scribes, Devin Boss, and Nikki Sandoval. They're here to talk about Black Friday, an event happening, celebrating the future of Black innovation in Portland. It's at the Hollywood Theater, September 1st. Go to their website for more, hollywoodtheater.org. Thank you so much for being here, you guys.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you for having us.
It's a full house here in production one. I want listeners to have a sense of how important the Black business sector is and how it impacts our overall economy for everyone in Portland. And I recognize that you're creating this event to mentor and support a community. I want to spread it out because it's the same with relationships. You guys are doing an event with business and love. And I just have to start there. Thanks again for being here. I want to go to Donovan. Donovan, what is this event happening at the Hollywood Theater? It's about Black love and also Black businesses. How did this come together?
Well, as much as I think I could speak to it, I feel like Devin could speak to it the best in terms of what this event is as the person who's going to be hosting and has been producing this. So you want to take it?
Yeah, please. Yeah. I want to hear all about it.
Yeah, so Black Friday is kind of like a story-centered community event that seeks to inspire and to celebrate Black achievement. It's kind of like a look behind us, a nod to the people that kind of innovated and blazed this trail for us to be here now, and a look ahead to see where it is that we're going, and to chart a path that makes sense from within our community. And, it's about kind of gaining a deeper agency over our own narrative and continuing to embrace each other and come together and build stronger relationships.
One of the things that struck me when I started looking at what you guys had on the mm-hmm. table for this event was you're doing it big. And I know that sounds weird, but you got Kobe Lewis. We don't talk about her enough, and I want to talk about her a little bit later.
Yeah.
But you're literally, and also love, like Geneva and Paul Knowles Sr., that's the greatest love story in Portland. I know that there was this movie years ago and Warren Beatty made it, and it was about Reds and all this, and that was very romantic. But that happened 100 years ago. When we're talking about Portland right now, Paul Knowles and Geneva Knowles are the most amazing love story of anyone. How long have you been having these events?
This is the first event. This is the first one.
I have to hear more from you.
Yeah.
Like, how did it show up this way? And I mean it. You've got venture capitalists. You've got really incredible people, the real rooted, most amazing leaders in the city. How did you do that?
Well, I definitely didn't do it on my own. It's all indicative of the show's essence in and of itself. No man or woman is an island. So it definitely took, me leaning into my own community, Donovan, Nikki, Zoe Piliafis, all of these people coming together to bring this idea into fruition. Ultimately, on my path, in my current endeavors, there are times where I kind of feel isolated in my pursuit of greatness. And I think that a small part of this was initiated out of selfishness. I just kind of wanted community. And I felt like I knew that there are other people out there that kind of felt the same way that I did. And, sometimes you can feel like an island by yourself. And, it's no way to pursue your dreams.
It's funny you would say that, because I had the pleasure of interviewing Paul Knowles Jr.
Mm-hmm.
2 years ago. No, it was 3 years ago when Geneva's Sheer Perfection was first closed because of the pandemic. And he shared so many stories. Like, we'll talk about business. We'll talk about, but the most important thing about Geneva's is that it was a hub of community. Like, you couldn't feel alone if you went there, which is really amazing. So let's go back to what is actually happening at the Hollywood Theater. What's going to happen that night?
So that night, we're going to open up with an homage to the life of love for Paul Knowles and Geneva's, and we'll transition into a story centering DJ Portland Trailblazers DJ OG1. He'll kind of take us through the Portland that he knew, and we'll be talking about the Portland that exists now, and introducing him to the creative homies, who are an amazing duo that are creating this gigantic creative incubator space called the Horizon Enterprise Building. And so, yeah, I mean, it's just one of those, it's kind of a film, it's a series of films that kind of encompass the past, present, and future of Portland's Black kind of economic and just social existence. And then after that, we'll move into a conversation with, you know, Marquita Giamarillo, Paige Hendricks Buckner, Stephen Green, Kobe Lewis, and kind of just detailing and talking and conversing about, you know, Black economics and how we continue to gain greater financial understanding.
And this is not a shallow business conversation. Sometimes when I go to events and people talk about small business, this is mm-hmm. not that conversation. Mm-hmm. This is a big conversation about larger forces, economic forces at work that impact your community. I know, I'm like, I have 14 heads right now. Kobe Lewis, I'm just going to Kobe Lewis. Like the first time I heard of Kobe Lewis, I feel as if she worked at a bank and her job was to do community outreach to help make sure that people were getting what they needed. And that was years ago. Now she's the executive director of Micro Enterprise Services of Oregon, MISO. I know a lot of people listening maybe don't even know what MISO is. So can we, let's swing through this interview and these questions I have and try to weave the answers back into this event that you have coming, because it is amazing. There's good people doing stuff everywhere, but we don't hear enough about it. So for our listeners, explain, what is MISO? Micro Enterprise Services of Oregon. Grab the handle. We have a lot of people in the room now, listeners, so we're doing the thing, okay? We're doing
the thing. MISO, I think, is one of the most important services in the city right now, because they help people in the space where if you have an idea for a business, they can help that idea to go from just that to actually having a business. Or if you're somebody who is a business person and trying to figure out how to get to that next space, they can connect you with the resources you need. And I've seen people go from, you know, small ideas or big ideas and go to those next levels because of me. So I've seen people go from, you know, selling, you know, lotions, for example, at a street fair to now they got a storefront, in part because of the things that MISO does. And I've been a beneficiary of their services myself several times over. You know, years ago I was selling t-shirts and didn't know what to do with my t-shirt business, and they, you know, really helped guide me through where I needed to go to get these t-shirts beyond me just like selling them and it feeling good because people were buying my t-shirts. But, you know, even right now where I'm at with you know, moving into writing and communications consulting, I just took a business class from them less than a year ago, and I'm using some of the resources that I got from them that those months ago right now as I'm moving into my next phase of business. So MISO is major.
Micro Enterprise Services of Oregon. And I meet people of all ages that go through there. Like, I know someone who's one of my favorite people in the world. He's on a board of directors of a prestigious thing. He's probably my age, maybe a little older. And he's been a business person his whole life. And he's still learning stuff from MISO, which is amazing. Mm-hmm. If you just tuned in, this is Keeping It Real. We've got a room full of guests. Our guests today are Donovan Scribes, Devin Boss, and Nikki Sandoval, here to talk about Black Friday, an event celebrating the future of Black innovation in Portland. And it's at the Hollywood Theater on September 1st. I want to scoot over to Nikki Sandoval, and because this room is too small. There, you do so much, and your role in this project is kind of a typical Nikki Sandoval thing, where you know people, you put them in a room next to each other, and then you help them carry the water that they want to carry from point A to point B. And I know that sounds like a weird thing I just said, but talk about the role that you played in the documentary about Paul and Geneva, please.
Hey, Portland. My name is Nikki Sandoval. I'm also affectionately known as Nikki Brown Clown. And I definitely... I have benefited from Geneva's, in particularly, not only as getting my hair done in the 90s, but most importantly, I went straight in there to pass out my flyers. And what I didn't know was that I was going to walk out with a mentor for life. A good portion of my adult life, the mayor, Mr. Paul Nall Sr. and mentored me. And what it did was him mentoring me humanized Portland, Black Portland for me. He also taught me that if you want to be a successful business person, a Black business owner here in Portland, you have to connect with the community. You can't just set up shop and just say, everybody come and get whatever I'm throwing at you. And so when he humanized that for me, showing me the pictures in Geneva's of all the folks that visited, whether they were, you know, had major talented.
Sammy Davis Jr., yeah.
Yeah, you've seen the Wall of Fame. So really, I'm a little sad. I'm a little salty that Wall of Fame is not there because I was hoping to make that wall. But basically, I was, at first, well, why would they ask me on this project? But then I realized that, you know, Mr. Knowles asked for me personally because we do have a personal relationship. You know, we text each other, we talk, we share grandchildren experiences. But it's about when you have connections with other business owners that you can share these ideas. And so what I'm hoping to do is humanize this love story and humanize Black love. I think a lot of times people don't see the buildings down MLK that are owned by Black people or where they used to be in Portland. They didn't humanize it. They just saw it as a business opportunity. And that's how gentrification happened, is that when you don't humanize the folks, you just see it as a business transaction. And so I look at this as an opportunity to see, as I was driving Mr. Knowles, as the documentary was being made, I was driving him to all the places in Portland where he had his first date, where he used to work. And he was telling me behind the scenes, I don't have those notes, exactly what he was telling me, but it really changed. I knew that he was married. I think I may even met his wife at one point. But how just spending that day with him and with Devin and taking those pictures and hearing, I had my first date here. This is what we saw. This is when I didn't have money. It really made me think about my own love story. Mm-hmm. And so thinking about, like, even my husband, I'm married to a banker, and his bank is sponsoring this event, Umpqua Bank. Shout out to y'all. It's like I think about how I am able to tell my story. Mr. Knowles was not, because there wasn't social media when he was coming up, right? So like now I can tell me and my husband's story, and it humanizes me and my husband as a couple. But I think that Devin coming back and telling that story, I just think that then people can walk away with why Black Portlanders are mourning this loss, because it's human. It's human to mourn something that you've lost.
Nikki, this is the thing that gets me, is how, and I think, because I've known you and I've followed your business and your love, actually, you're one of the rare people that takes the love that you have of people, the love you have of kids, the love you have of your city, of your country even, and turns it into a business, turns it into a show in your clown show. But I think a lot of people who follow you are probably really interested in the work that you've done with foster children. Like when we talk about people who are business people, when we talk about people who are in love, maybe a lot of the performing artists that I know, there are people who work with kids. It's like, it's not separate. It's the same container, but we don't see it all the time. I want to ask you, what does someone's love for their spouse have to do with business? I know that sounds like a bald-faced question, but I want to ask it.
Well, in love, what people don't realize is that's the secret sauce. I mean, I think about, like, I've been in business for 12 years, and out of the 12 years, I've been married 7 of those. And so I think about, I don't know, the is bigger and better. I mean, I have the support, that hidden support. I it was quite apparent to me that no matter how many people I hire or whatever, so when I looked up and I was at Pickathon and I had a line of 100 children, even with an assistant, I looked over and I saw my husband, who's an investment banker, community reinvestment banker, sitting there tying balloons. Mm-hmm. That's the kind of love that you get. Also, too, it's the you know, usually if you have a partner, I don't know, I don't recommend marrying a clown, but I didn't marry a clown. I married the what I don't have. I just said, like, I've tried to be with an artist, but you guys wouldn't have had the same brown clown. Like, dudes just wouldn't. But marrying my husband, he brought to me that business aspect that I couldn't, you know, just filling in that gaps, you know. He might have a spreadsheet. he showed me how to use Google calendars. But that love story that you see, it just, again, it talks to, let me go back to what I originally said. This whole thing is about humanizing things. You want to why I'm probably the beloved clown is because I humanize and I tell my story online. And so the reason why the love story is important is because, again, Devin is giving us a behind the scenes of what was Mr. Nall's ultimate push and passion in life was his wife. If you ever talk to him, he still talks about her as if she is right there in the room. It hasn't wavered. It hasn't done anything. And, you know, I mean, Mr. Knowles didn't do hair. So, I mean, right. You know, so to me, again, it's important for us to humanize our love and what motivates us. I think moms usually do that, but we rarely see behind the scenes of two black people being in love and how it inspires us to build a whole entire community. Hmm.
The other thing that strikes me about the Knowles family, especially Geneva Knowles, Paul Knowles Sr., is that there's salad days, like the best days of their life, were part of what gentrification stole from this entire city. Like the businesses that they presided over, the communities that they were hubs of, right? When the wrecking ball came and started taking Albina down, like that was right in the middle of their beautiful world. You know what I'm saying? I don't want to say they as if we're not all us, but when I started looking at the businesses that were torn down along Albina during the gentrification time, like you could see that this was the skeleton of a world. This is exactly what we were all trying to achieve when Sam Adams was mayor. You know, a 20-minute city where you could walk anywhere and there was donuts and you knew the name of the person making the donuts and they knew your kid's name. That's what our city tore down. And so to be able to lift up Paul and Geneva Knoll's story and show these are lives well lived. And I mean, I still see Paul Knowles when I go to get my COVID shot. Like he's over there at the clinic, he's waving, you know, there's people all around him. Mm-hmm. He had such an impact. But I guess I'm coming back to that issue of, we're talking about Black Friday, which is an event that is happening at Hollywood Theater on September 1st. In my heart, this is everyone's love. This is everyone's city. And it's so hard for me to begin to understand what Paul and Geneva went through. Because they did. Not only did they see so much destroyed, when they were basically kind of almost like the keepers of people's kids, people bring their kids over and drop them off and until it was time to get their hair cut. Like that takes a lot of courage. People don't do that anymore. So it's almost like Paul and Geneva, like their values are the values we should all have and that we want to see. We want to see our whole society share values like that. If you just tuned in, the show is Keeping It Real. I'm your host, Lisa Loving. We're here in a small room with Donovan Scribes, Devin Boss, and Nikki Sandoval. And we're talking about Black Friday, which is it's a really kind of a big event happening at the Hollywood Theater, September 1st. And I want to shift gears and go back to that event a little bit because I think part of what you're doing is gathering community to be there. Mm-hmm. Talk about, like, if someone's listening right now, and hopefully this interview is going to be running right before your event. We want to be able to invite people. Who should show up at the Hollywood Theater on September 1st for Black Friday?
I would say anybody that is seeking community, anybody that feels like they could use more support in their life. I think anybody that's reaching, that wants to reach as far as their arms will allow, but maybe doesn't know how. I think people that... I think people that need resources that are most likely out there that they just don't have proximity to or knowledge of. I think anybody that wants to have a good time, anybody that enjoys film, anybody that wants to support black businesses, there's going to be a lot of black vendors there. You know what I'm saying? Just growing and engaging in community. Like Nikki said, I mean, I think that one of the biggest intangibles that can help improve somebody's trajectory is a connection, a deeper connection to community. You know, like I think I'm living proof of that as I continue down my path, that the only reason this event is happening is because of community. And so, you know, I think you can either be a single hair, you can be a braid. And I think this is an attempt at creating a braid.
And I know a little bit about DJ OG1, but I've never heard of Creative Homies. Can you tell us more about them?
Man, Creative Homies, they are amazing. So it's Cyrus Coleman and Wale Agbula. They're two friends and business partners that have come together to create a gigantic creative incubator space called the Horizon Enterprise. It's just kind of like a one-stop shop for the black community to come work, play, rest, and to be safe. You know, like the basement's going to have like this crazy jazz room called the Black Note and the Speakeasy. Mm-hmm. The first floor is going to have a rotating art gallery, and it's going to serve coffee by day and wine by night. And floor number two is going to have like this maker space where like you can just imagine it being like this kind of like Nike space, but not so much. Like it's a place where you can just create anything, shirts, jerseys, flyers, whatever. And it's just like, and it's going to be high end. It's endless almost. Like you can paint, dye, do anything. On the third floor, it'll be like this production space with an infinity wall and rentable production equipment, and just you name it. It's a building where you can come here, you can do your best work, but you might also hopefully run into another dope black person that's working on, and like that doesn't really exist here. Mm-mm. You know what I'm saying? We are scattered, and so like it's a place where you can centralize the tribe and people that are really trying to do something, or just a place where you can come and be. And so I think they're creating a space that, like me, I am personally like ecstatic about. Like, I can't wait for it to be done.
When's it going to be ready?
I think I actually just talked to them recently, and I think that they actually just got all of the funding that they needed for the entire project, for the entire space, like everything, which is, you know, I mean, that's huge. Like that's quite the thing that they did. And so for them to have gotten all the funding that they needed shows that they have a lot of community support and that they know what they're doing.
You know, I want to say Stephen Green, if you're listening to this interview and you've never heard of Stephen Green, he's a major business leader. I'm just going to describe him as a major business leader in the Portland metro area, a visionary. And I'll say, I mean, I can also say he's a black visionary and he advocates on behalf of a lot of black businesses. But that guy actually has fingers on the pulse for everybody.
Yeah.
I don't care who you are. You need to be listening to what he's saying. And I was at a Journalism Innovation Center event at the University of Oregon White Stag Block. I want to say it was 10 years ago. And they wrapped around Stephen Green and basically held an entire event where they brought people together. And Stephen Green said, okay, but who's your angel investor in that media? Are you bringing more investors in black media? What are you doing with the communities of color? Are you investing in them? Like, he freaked everybody out because nobody asked that before. And it changed, I think it changed that community of people there at the University of Oregon. But I think that having anyone to stand up and ask the most obvious questions, like, where is the money? Mm-hmm. Where is it going? Like, it takes someone with a lot of integrity. And he's that guy. He just got a fancy new job, too, I think.
not surprised. Stephen's actually how I came to be, how I was made aware of the Creative Homies. First, they won the Pitch Black, but I actually had a conversation with Stephen about the Creative Homies, and I mean, immediately knew that they were people that needed to be kind of like their existence and their work needed to be broadcasted on a greater level.
There's a point where, as a business person, some people have really huge visions, and some people have just a smaller vision. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot more support for people who just want to open up a t-shirt shop or just want to do something like that. But when you're talking about Kobe Lewis, you're talking about leveraging an entire building. Yeah, I mean, and there other things, like there's other big changes in Oregon around that, isn't there? There's going to be a gigantic fund for Oregonians, like a business fund that was started by, see, this is what happens when you don't do all of the notes. I'm going to have to shift gears because I cannot remember her name. But
are you talking about Rekaya?
Rekaya Adams. Hello. Oh. Can you talk about who is Rekaya Adams and what did she just do? I feel like this is like a news quiz. My goodness.
Here, pull up. Yeah, grab the handle.
Yeah. Yeah, I think Rekaya Adams is one of the most important people in the state of Oregon in our history, and shaping in a major way our future, because that same story that you're speaking to in terms of what has been taken in the Black community, you know, I think in the last decade or so, there's really not too much of a shortage of people talking about what's been taken. I think there's a lot of conversation about that, and, you know, it's being brought to the surface more and more. How deep that goes, now how much action happens around that, that's a whole different story. Mm-hmm. But there's a lot of talk about what happened. And so I think where Rekaya comes in terms of the Albina vision, is saying, yeah, that happened. Now, what are we going to do about it? And as somebody who has a mind for business and money and investment, she's really taking that idea and not, as Devin was talking about, being an island about it, but really reaching in with community and saying, you know, has spent a lot of time talking to people about what needs to happen, where is the future of Black Oregon in all of this. And I think it's even extending beyond Portland. That's why I say the state, where is the future, especially as we have been, you know, scattered and pushed throughout not just the state, but up into Washington or wherever people might end up landing, and saying, how do we make more of a home that feels like people have the ability to not just be here, but exist and thrive and dream? And, you know, that's so much of what we need, is that ability to be able to sit and think and plan for the next thing. And so, you know, the hundreds of millions of dollars that have been secured is a big step. The buildings, I think, like, they secured a building through Portland Public Schools, or there's an agreement that they have first option to buy over there by the Rose Quarter. There's a lot of things that she's doing, and I feel like that we don't even know that she's got in play that are gonna be good. And, you know, I did want to just jump back in terms of, and it threads to what you're talking about with Albina Vision, and, you know, just this larger idea here at play, and you know, not just seeing community as like numbers, but, you know, you know, that building that Geneva's was at, it was just a Winchell's, you know, back in the day. And so just thinking about that, like, for that building to mean so much after Mr. Knowles and Geneva made it into what it is, now it's a part of the fabric of this community. It's part of
history. It's Joe Brown's caramel corn now.
Right.
Like, and, just slow down, everybody. I'm not going to talk about how much I love caramel corn.
So, you know, that trajectory, because they really put a stake in the ground for the community, it meant a lot. I think as much as, like, the surprise came of, like, oh man, Geneva's isn't here anymore, and trying to figure out what that all really meant for everybody, especially during COVID. I think the other question is, like, what's going to happen with the building? What's going to happen? Because, you know, it wasn't just that Mr. Knowles and Geneva owned a business, they owned a building. And so I think a lot of us didn't want to see that building go and become another part of the story that we continue to see unfolding every single day in front of us. Mm-hmm. And so being able to see, you know, that building, what you were just speaking to, Joe Brown's, it's not just Joe Brown's, it's another Black business person, a young Black business person who took a Portland staple, you know, was able to franchise it out and then come back to Geneva's, made it feel like relief. You know, it was a big relief for people to see, like, okay, this, it's not the same thing, but it feels like the story continues, the legacy continues. And so I think that's a major, major part of, you know, what we're getting to see is that Mr. Knowles, again, is not looking at the community just as a investment. You know, he was saying, how can I continue my legacy? How can I continue this for Black Portland?
That's Donovan Scribes talking, and there's a lot. There's a lot there. I know from talking to Paul Jr. that they were hoping to do something important with that building when they knew that they were going to shut down the business. So it's something that the family thought, like you just said, this is a legacy. How do we continue it? We're not just going to give up the lease that it's going to be a 7-Eleven tomorrow. Mm-hmm. It's interesting. If you're listening right now, you're not sure what we're talking about, because we're doing a lot of name talking dropping right now. Rukaya Adams, former chief investment officer of the Meyer Memorial Trust, she launched this huge, we haven't used the term reparations. And Charles Ogletree just passed away a couple weeks ago. Charles Ogletree, who was an attorney and academic, he spoke at the Scanner Breakfast maybe 15, 20 years ago about reparations. Had never heard anybody speak about it as intelligently as he. And when we talk about reparations, a lot of people talk about reparations for African-American communities, like, so much cruelty, so much oppression, it's hard to put a number on that, okay? Like, and that's, I think, a reason why so many people think, oh, well, we could pay back the Japanese internees' families, but nobody could ever pay, the cost of the transatlantic slave trade. Check it out. So Rukaya Adams, this thing, it's called the 1803 Fund. She got an initial investment, $400 million, from Phil Knight and Penny Knight, the co-founder of Nike. And now this is going to move forward. Like, I'm not even sure if everybody's sure exactly what's going to be done with this fund, because she's literally building the plan. Mm-hmm. The Rukaya Adams, too, is another person born and raised in North and Northeast Portland, always been here. She was interviewed for the Scanner when she was like 5 years old, right? somebody who's been around here. We are surrounded by geniuses. And like, when are we going to just get out of you guys' way? Right? That's the way I feel about it. We were talking about Rukaya Adams. We've been talking about Paul and Geneva Knowles, who were two of the longest African-American business owners in the city of Portland. And Geneva Knowles passed away in 2014. I don't know if we've been clear about that. And Paul and Geneva Knowles, again, this is for people who just moved here, and a lot of people have just shown up in this space. They presided over the coolest nightlife ever in the history of the city of Portland. I think that's a fair statement. Mm-hmm. People are still talking about Jump Town. And they had a nightclub in downtown Portland. They had a nightclub in Northeast Portland. They had Sammy Davis Jr. They had some of the greatest performers of our day there. And I just, for people who are trying to follow this conversation, because we're talking in terms of very deep conceptual waters here. I do believe that the work you're doing with Stephen Green, this event, bringing Kobe, bringing folks together like this, this is a game changer. This is a game changer near and far. And maybe Nikki's a person I want to ask this question, because we will always say small businesses are the backbone of the state of Oregon. And yet, I don't know if we really walk that talk. And Nikki, you deal in your work as a clown, as a performer, okay? I'm not even talking about your work as a foster parent educator. You're that too. But as a clown, you're often there in someone's family, in the middle of somebody's family birthday party, but you might also be in the middle of the library or like a corporation doing a show. I feel like you have seen a lot of what happens in this town through your eyes, wearing a green wig. And that's fine, because my hair is a little green right now too. But Nikki, like, from your point of view, what do you see happening in Portland? You know a lot. You see people's babies and you see their bosses. You see them all. What do you see happening in the city of Portland right now?
I will reiterate, I was taught personally by Mr. Knowles to shake hands and kiss babies. And that's exactly how I built my career. And there's been a lot of changes in Portland, but what hasn't changed about Black Portlanders, and I have to distinguish that, because my world is Black Portland. I do interact as I've grown my business. I am going, have I would have to say that I'm getting invited into mainstream Portland, but it's because they want to have access to Black Portland, and they're finally realizing as things change. See, we stay the same. Anytime that it's changed, it's because the change has been forced upon us. And so, again, we've stayed the same. So being taught by Mr. Knowles, I learned firsthand that Black Portlanders, that we are we do business intergenerationally. So that's the reason why I'm saying, when I say kids, babies, I know someone's, I visit churches, I visit, even whether our church is in the numbers or if it happens to still be here, the church I attended is now Potnas, but I won't go there. but at the end of the day, I know someone's grandma, I know their great grandchildren, and it's very important. And so that's the thing. And that's what I love about Portland. And the reason why we'll still continue to be here as Black Portlanders is it'll take the young people like Donovan and Devin to continue to tell those stories and tell, and again, I will come back and say my word for this interview is humanize. Humanize that we are multi-generational here in Portland. And regardless of how Portland changes, we still get together. And Mr. Knowles made it possible for us to still have a prominent gathering space. And that's what Mr. Ferguson, who's the owner of the Joe Browns, he's made it possible for us not to also have a place where we can just jump in and grab our popcorn. But on the other half, we also have where we can gather and have lunch or have cocktails. And it's completely the essence of Mr. Knowles. So Mr. Knowles, he was an intergenerational business person. Just as if today, he texts me pictures of his great-grandchildren, and I have learned that. Now that I am a new grandma, well, I've been a grandma for 11 years, and I learned that from Mr. Knowles, from Geneva. So that's how Black Portland are, and I'm excited about this film coming because people, the mainstream Portland, will actually get a front row seat if they show up on September 1st, to see exactly that we've been here. Because what the change is that I don't like about Portland is that when I did live outside of the state, or when I travel and you see a Portland ad, you will not see Black Portlanders represented. And that's the change. We used to be, when Mr. Knowles was running the city, when he had all those businesses that you named, Sammy Davis Jr. and other artists came here specifically because it was known that there were Black businesses and Black safe places to come and do and practice their art. Artists were here. Black Portlanders built all of the art and made Portland what it was, the quirkiness. Well, as people move in, the change is that they say, oh, I want to come here and get the art, but you're not making it a place where artists can live. So, and you're making all of the art go away. So one of the things that we're going to be able to see in this is that maybe if you knew what we had, then you'll understand why it's important to preserve it.
I'm sorry. Go ahead, Donovan.
Yeah, I just wanted to speak more too in terms of this interconnectedness and, you know, the generational side of things and, you know, the love piece that we've been speaking to, because we've been talking about babies and it hasn't quite been dropped. But the other producer on this, Zoe Pelioffice, is my partner. And so, you know, that's how I've been able to get weaved into being able to be a part of documenting the Knowles story in this particular, fashion. And so I know Devin and Zoe have been dreaming this thing up for a year, but when it got to the point of like saying let's document Mr. Knowles, I think the thing that became more special about this event was actually documenting the love story, because I think Mr. Knowles, his story is pretty well documented now. Like, I think he's probably been in every paper, every magazine in the state of Oregon at this point. And that's good. He deserves that. And we should continue to talk about the Knowles legacy. But the love piece of their story, I think is what, even when Devin and I went to his house to be able to sit and learn a little bit more about who they were together. And that was really special for me to be able to hear who they were to each other. And what was even more amazing is like the type of things that they did, you know, like they were going and skiing, you know.
They were in the ski club.
Like every mountain in the country, you know what I'm saying? With like thousands of black people.
With black people, right.
People to do that.
Right.
I bet Geneva had really nice clothes when she did it too.
Oh, right.
See the flyers. They were dressed to the nines, y'all.
Sure.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Right. So they were never not fly. Yeah. I think that's
never not
fly. No. That could have been the other name for the film.
Never not fly.
Because also seeing all the pictures that Devin was able to interweave into the film, you know, you see that like they really look on point at every single point of their lives together. But, you know, they would go and do that. They were always staying active, you know, through their 70s and 80s and 90. Now, Mr. Knowles, you know, just making sure they're walking. You know, I remember...
I see him out all the time.
Right, when we were up there at NAACP, you know, they had the office there, and he'd just be walking down, you know, getting his steps in up there at Lloyd, just doing his thing.
The
you
man's
know?
Like omnipresent in Portland. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah, I saw Mr. Knowles. Uh-huh. Like that's, but Geneva's story in that, and the love that he not just had for her, but has for her, was really special for me to be able to like sit down with him. I think we were there for more than an hour, a couple hours, and really listen to him talk about Geneva. And then be able to really sit with those words and make something beautiful out of it, you know, and write a letter, because he says he's never written a love letter to Geneva. And so I was able to kind of gather those words and those stories and memories, and also try and reflect on my own love and what my partner means to me, and kind of like translate that into something that would be potent for their love, you know.
So when I say that Paul and Geneva's love story is the most beautiful, compelling love story in the city of Portland, listen, I have to look at you both. This guy, he is 92, same age as my mother. Now you,
sheesh,
most people would not look at as nice as handsome as he is as a 92-year-old man and think, I wonder what is his most deep romantic and sexual needs. Like, I wonder, they wouldn't look at him as a lover. They wouldn't look at him as a lover. No, I'm serious. So I know I'm bringing it back. So my question for you both, and my question for all three of you, is how did you set the stage for him to even share stories like that? Because the word is intimate, right? Yeah, we know everything about Geneva. We know everything about Paul Sr., but we don't know in his words what she meant to him. Like, you went straight, it's totally okay to cry. Crying is a normal thing. We can be crying right now, but I'm sure people at that event are gonna cry.
I think so.
So like, what did you do to bring that story out of him? And how did you even know that that was a story that needed to be told?
Go ahead.
I would say the thought came from Zoe, you know, that like, let's ask him about his love for Geneva. Let's do that, you know, because Paul had already been decided on, or Mr. Knowles, for, you know, documentation. But that was her thought. And I think everybody thought that was a beautiful arc to take with his story. And, you know, she asked him if he had ever written a love letter to Geneva. And he said, I don't think I have. I don't recall ever doing that. And so close to 50 years of marriage, 49 years. And, you know, you can tell that the letter is not the mark of love. They had plenty of memories, plenty of things that he reflects on. But this is one way to, you know, share that. And so he was willing to, you know, have us come by his house and sit down with him and just ask him questions. I was able to just like ask him a bunch of questions about their life together. And it's not really hard to pull out of him. You know, he's got plenty to share. And, you know, Geneva and him, they're posted all throughout his house. And, you know, he talked about like this red convertible that he was able to buy her. And he still got it in the garage. And there's all these, you know, he's got this frame news article about Geneva's greens, mm-hmm. and, you know, and mm-hmm. he was talking about like how good she was with that. But, you know, and hearing more about their marriage and at that house muffins. And the blueberry muffins, the blueberry muffins, the blueberry muffins.
Yeah, people are gonna
come to the theater to hear.
Yeah. Right, 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 right.
We can't. Right.
It's a teaser. It's a teaser.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a
teaser.
You three. I mean, I want to ask all three of you, what are you going to do next? But not yet. I don't know if I'm ready. Like, I want to walk it back to the panel discussion because mm-hmm. I don't know everyone that's on that panel discussion. Paige Hendricks Buckner. So I'm slightly shifting gears because I want to get even more of what you're talking about into this interview. Who is Paige Hendricks Buckner?
Well, Paige is the CEO of All Raise. She's an amazing human being, and she really represents like women in leadership. And I think that she is a powerful force. I think she was just on Forbes recently. She's just kind of like all over the place. Extremely charismatic, intelligent, amazing human being, and we're lucky to have her.
And Marquita Jaramillo. Black Founders Matter Funds.
Yeah, yeah. Black Founders Matter. I mean, Marquita, from my personal experience, is just somebody that knows how to connect dots and to bring people together. The first time that I was introduced to her was through one of their networking events. And I remember leaving there feeling like I had never been to an event like that where it was so human-centered, where it was more about grounding us and who we were as people first and connecting on that and on that level rather than seeing each other as our occupations. And so I just loved the way that she was able to create that space for us. And I tried to bring a lot of that into this event. You know, it's like a human-centered, story-centered, community-centered thing where we can be productive, we can be business-oriented, but it has to come from the heart first. Otherwise, I don't think that there's anything meaningful there that can last.
Devin, I have never met you before, and I just have to stop what I'm doing and say, who inspires you?
My mom. My mom inspires me. And, you know, I'm the type of person, you know, when I feel a certain way about my story or feel sorry for myself or start losing sense, I'll watch like a Quincy Jones documentary over and over again or things like that. You know, black people from like that time period that had to deal with things that were there were just so, all these upheavals that like we think like it's also relative. But like back then they did way more than I did and under way more arduous circumstances. And so it's so easy for me to like take a step out of myself and to look at like a Sammy Davis or you know what I'm saying, or a Sam Cooke or any of these people. You name any black person from that decade or from back then. And it's so easy to realign yourself with your sense of purpose. And I think that those black people like my father just continue to keep me on that path that sometimes gets murky.
That's amazing. I thank you for bringing Devin to this interview because I had never met Devin and I love that. Yeah, come into the room, tell the whole story. Okay, Devin, what are you gonna do next?
Oh man, that's an interesting question.
Not that this is done yet, but what are you going to do?
I mean,
next?
Well, the immediate hope is that this show continues on an annual basis, at least an annual basis, and that we can continue to, that I want this to be, like, this show isn't us taking an authoritative position on any of this. It's just us trying to be a part of a growing thing that has meaning, that has love, that has power. I don't ever want to pretend to be like I'm the person, but I want to be one of the people that is helping to bring people together and to create this web, this thread, this braid of community where we have something that is within us. There aren't these external forces, this gravitational pull towards BS on, you know, outside of black people. And so I just want to continue to do things that are black. You know, I'm actually filming a documentary in collaboration with Travel Oregon about reintroducing black men to the great outdoors. And yeah, those are kind of the things that I have coming up next. And, you know, I always stay on my toes.
Excellent. I want to ask, I want to ask Donovan and I want to ask Nikki the same thing, one at a time. Donovan, grab that microphone handle.
Yep,
because, okay, full disclosure, I've worked with Donovan in the past. He's been a coworker of mine. I always loved your sense of just throwing yourself forward. Like, and I know that there's a lot of thought going on, but there's a lot of courage, man. Like, you have done things that I have thought, God, I wish I had that. I wish I had the huevos to do that. Mm. What are you going to be working on now?
Well, right now I'm working on, you know, communications consulting and building that as my business. So I have a push that I'll be making later around that. But in terms of the most immediate, I've been working with a friend of Devin's, actually, Matt Randall, and LaQuisha Manyweather on building out a park in St. John's. It's called George Park. It's right off Fessenden, and it's in between four different schools, and it's like severely lacking the type of infrastructure that a park like that should have. And so we've been visioning and pushing for a few years to get that recognized as an issue that the city should address. And so as part of that, we're throwing out the Kids Outside Festival too. On August 26th, 2 to 4 p.m., in partnership, actually, with the city's Summer Free-for-All program. And we'll have Matt Randall performing alongside Yawa. A lot of people know her formerly as Aminta Abioto. We'll also have Selah, and we'll also have Nikki Brown Clown. She won't be rapping or anything.
Beanbag toss, we're there.
Yeah.
I am happy to say that I'm going to be at George Park with myself, some of my crew members, the new Brown Clown crew. We're going to be twisting some balloons like y'all had last year, but bigger and better. Yep. And we'll have the signature beanbag toss. And of course, don't forget to get a selfie with Nikki Brown Clown.
Come on.
Yeah, so come through TKO Fest 2 and be a part of this larger effort to reimagine George Park. That's what we got going.
Okay. I have to be the one that asks Nikki, right? This is going to look like a slight shifting of the frame. Nikki, I'm such a fan of the work you did with foster parent educating. And who loves TikTok? I almost said TikTok. Who loves TikTok? There's people out there that love it.
Oh, no, right?
But listen,
you're showing our age, though.
No. I'm saying that, actually. Nikki, I've seen you pick up tools and do the most incredible here, look, I'm going to start crying again. Totally okay to cry, you guys. Mm-hmm. But, like, the work that you're doing is not even work I've seen anybody else do, and it was totally appropriate that you heard a child's voice right now. Like, tell me more. Are you going to write a book about that, or are you going to continue?
I'm going to write a book, but what I do got, I was sitting there cooking up as you were asking these two guys, like, what are you guys going to be doing? And what I have coming up is I'm going to be working with a nonprofit called Project Lemonade. They're based out of Lloyd Center. Project Lemonade is a humane way, that's my word, humane way for children in care to go shopping. One of the hardest things is, as a foster parent, we don't have enough resources for clothing, or if we are offered clothes, it's no one wants to go pick up a banana box or a trash bag of donated clothes. So there is a boutique style store that's only open to foster parents and youth to go shopping, and it looks just like I think they're in the old Children's Place. If you're a parent, you know where Children's Place, what it used to look like. So it's a storefront where kiddos can just come in and you get a shopping bag and you throw it in the bag. So I'm going to be working with them as Nikki Brown Clown to provide a story. I was going to do a story time today, but because of the heat and some other issues, but I'm going to be doing a specific story time, creating a safe space for foster youth or youth in foster care. Excuse me. Let me change the trajectory of that. They are not foster children. They're in foster care. That's the system. But that their kiddos who are experiencing this DHS, they can come in and have a safe story time. So that's what I'm working on but I'm also been using my platform, and I've been learning from these lovely storytellers on that you have to tell your story. So talking about humanizing, I'm trying to humanize foster parenting In the Black community, we've always done it under kinship, meaning that you take in somebody that you know, you take in somebody in your family, and I've often done that, actually. The only difference is I have a license to do it. And so I wanted to show the softer side and the humane side of, because there is a huge myth that Black and brown folks don't foster or adopt children. We have been doing it from day one. That's a whole nother thing. But so that's what I have going on in terms of me being a foster parent. But I have to say that if we can go back to what's going to happen at the Hollywood Theater, that we have the panel, Devin and Donovan told us all the great things. But one of the things that's been left out is that I want to hear from y'all. When you see me at the theater, I'm going to have a table. Zoe's going to set up a table for me. Come by and see me. I'm not going to be dressed as a clown, but I am going to be there probably in some glitter ensemble because Mr.
Will there be glitter?
I'm going to bring the
there
glitter.
There will be glitter.
Yeah, there's always going to be some glitter. Come in your regal stuff, but I want to collect the stories of, you know, how did you experience Genevas? I want to know. So if you want to tell me before then, hit me up on my socials and I will send you a form. But I know y'all are busy, so I'm not going to play with you. But when I see you at the thing, stop by my booth. I'll have some Joe's popcorn. And come and tell me and we can quit. I'll give you a link and you guys can tell me if you got your hair did, if you got a bar, if you got a cut. Did you know, Lisa, did you know it was a barbershop too? And you can get your hair done too.
I believe
so
it
was both.
I believe it.
You believe it? Okay, I just want
to. So 2 weeks ago, our guest on this show was Sonali Kolhatkar, who is a journalist from Los Angeles. She just wrote a book about the power of narrative. And what everyone in this room, and even some of the people in the hallway right now agree, is that the power of narrative is the power that actually makes us change.
Yes.
So that's really where you're at. That's what this is. And I want to, just a few minutes left. I want to go back and just for people who just joined at the end of the hour, let's talk about one more time what there's going to what's going to be happening at the Hollywood Theater on September 1st when everyone's invited comes over for Black Friday.
Yeah, we'll be showing two films that are intended to inspire and celebrate Black achievement, having conversations about Black economics, and really sharing resources that exist in the city right now that people need to be made aware of. To put it very simply, you know, honestly, it's just about us coming together, having fun, celebrating each other, and gaining a deeper understanding of what's all around us.
Alrighty then. I just have to say thank you again for being here. Does anybody have like one last thing that they think is really important to say?
Get your ticket.
Get your ticket.
Get your tickets now.
Get your ticket. Be there, be square.
Hollywood Theater. Hollywood Theater. And I hope to bring you all back again. This is really fun.
I appreciate you.
Thank you.
So just want to thank our guests, Donovan Scribes, Devin Boss, and Nikki Sandoval. Black Friday is at the Hollywood Theater on September 1st. Go to their website for more. That's hollywoodtheater.org. Special thanks to KBOO Public Affairs Director Ender Black and Program Director Asia Hawthorne for making this all possible. KBOO Community Radio is reemerging. Get involved by emailing volunteer@kboo.org. Thanks for listening. And stay tuned.